All right, we'll look at Matthew chapter 5. We are on the most important words that Jesus preached, the very first long sermon that Jesus preached to his disciples. And as we said, that he is giving us here the covenant terms, the blessings and cursing, and the characteristics of people who will be eligible to enter the coming government of Jesus Christ. These are the people who will be selected, chosen to enter the kingdom. Anything short of this, they will be knocking at the door, and Jesus will say, "I did not know you." This is very serious. This is very important. This is where your lifeline is. These are the teachings of Jesus Christ. Last time we covered verse 3, and Jesus said, "Blessed are the poor in spirit." So these are attitudes or disposition that we need to have. The first one being poor in spirit. What does that mean? We spoke about that being humble. Humility is where we start. All right, if you're not humble, well, it will be not possible for us to have or develop the other attitudes that Jesus is going to speak about. So we look at the second one today. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. And we'll look at verse 5 also. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. So we have two attitudes over here. Jesus is talking about mourning and meekness. What does that mean? What is Jesus trying to say? What does it mean to when Jesus says, "Blessed are they that mourn"? And what does it mean to be meek, of a meek spirit? Let's break this up first. Let's talk about verse 4. What does the word mourn mean? The Greek word translated mourn over here is the word pentheo. P-E-N as in pen, and theo. Pentheo. There are actually 9 Greek words that are used for the word mourn, okay, in the New Testament, like sorrow, grief, sadness, and all those. There are different 9 different Greek words. But this word, pentheo, is the strongest of all Greek words that is used in the New Testament. It is used to express grief. It is used to express grief. It often refers to people mourning for the dead. All right? It's a very passionate lament, you would say. And we see this word appearing in the Septuagint. Septuagint is actually the Greek version of the Old Testament. Okay, and we see this same word being used of Jacob's grief when he was told that his son Joseph was dead. Now you can think about that. You can imagine and feel what his father went through, right? When he hears that his young son is dead. Although he was not, but he got the news that he is dead, right? Because his brothers brought the coat of many colors that he used to wear, wrapped in blood, and told him that he was dead. Look at this in Genesis chapter 37, verse 32 to 34. Then they sent the tunic of many colors, and they brought it to their father and said, "We have found this. Do you know whether it is your son's tunic or not?" and he recognized it and said, "It is my son's tunic. A wild beast has devoured him. Without doubt, Joseph is torn to pieces." Then Jacob tore his clothes, put sackcloth on his waist, and mourned for his son many days. This describes the deep inner agony that Jacob went through. It was not just his external grief, right? It was, and I can't explain it, but it is something that we feel from inside, the deep sorrow, the deep grief that you would stop eating, sleeping, right? And it just takes over your entire life when you, that kind of grief it's talking about. That's the word Jesus decides to use up among all the 9 Greek words that are there. What is he trying to say? Of course, we do mourn for our loved ones, right? But is that what Jesus is trying to say? No, actually, what he's trying to say is that this kind of grief, this kind of deep inner agony, this kind of sorrow, we should show and have towards sin. Let me finish it. In our lives, sin towards, or in our lives, we should, what does it mean? It basically means that we need to, Jesus is saying that we should take sin seriously. We should take sin seriously. How many people do you know who mourn over their sin today? And one of the problems we increasingly face today in our day is lack of seriousness. Lack of seriousness concerning sin. Yes, you know, big sins, I hate it, people say. But they let go small sins. Small sins. In many, you know, and today in Christianity, that is what is going on. Sin is taken very lightly. It's not taken seriously anymore. So when we take sin seriously, that means we are mourning. We are mourning over our sinful condition. Look at this passage in Psalms 51, verse 3 and 4. This is David speaking. Remember when David committed adultery and killed Bathsheba's husband? And he, in this Psalms, he's mourning for the sin he committed. You know, at that time, he did not think about it. He was completely clouded with the power of his desire, right? But look at that late, he mourns. He's deeply grieved of the actions that he took. He says, "For I acknowledge my transgressions, and my sin is always before me. Against you, you only have I sinned and done this evil in your sight, that you may be found just when you speak and blameless when you judge." David was devastated by the effects of sin on his relationship to God. See, you know, people take it very lightly because they don't see God, right? With the naked eye. But when you sin, this is exactly what happens in reality. There is a separation of fellowship between you and God. That is the reality. Now, so we should not be deceived in thinking that, hey, little sin here and there is okay, and God will take it, you know, it will go unnoticed, or God will just forgive me. No, it's not like that. Even the smallest, tiniest sin that we think it is sin in the eyes of God. And it brings grief to Him, and it breaks our relationship with Him, because He is holy. He's complete, He's pure and holy. That's why David said in the same Psalms, in verse 10, create in me a clean heart. Clean heart. O God, and renew a steadfast spirit in me. Do not cast me away from your presence. Why is he saying that? Because he understands that there is a separation of fellowship. And do not take your Holy Spirit from me, meaning your presence, your favor, your power from me, or your guidance from me. Look, verse 12. Restore to me the joy. What is he asking? Restore to me the joy. You know, sin brings sorrow. Sin brings guilt. No joy. There is no joy in sin. But when we acknowledge and confess, our joy is restored. So he says, restore to me the joy of your salvation and uphold me by your generous spirit. In this passage, we learn a couple of things. Number one is that David had sinned, but he sinned foremost against God. Right? He says that he sinned against God. He did sin against Bathsheba's husband and against David's wife. But notice here, foremost, he's sinning against who? God. And that's what we need to understand. When we lie, when we cheat, or when we deceive, or when we do things that are sin, we are doing against God first, then against others. Psalm 32, verses 1 to 5. This is the same account. And I want you to really notice here in this psalm how David is expressing this trauma. He says, how blessed is the one whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. How blessed is the person against whom the Lord does not charge iniquity, and in whose spirit there is no deceit. That's the person who's blessed, who's forgiven, right? When I kept silent about my sin, remember, he kept silent about his sin for almost a year. And there was no fellowship between David and God for almost a year. He said, when I kept silent about my sin. And so what happened to in that whole 1 year? What was David going through? He's expressing here in this Psalms. He says, my body wasted away by my groaning all day long. For your hand was heavy upon me day and night. My strength was exhausted as in the summer drought. My sin I acknowledged to you. My iniquity I did not hide. I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord, and you forgave the guilt of my sin. So he's going through groaning all day long and guilt for one whole year. Right? He says, but the moment he confessed his sin, remember Nathan came and said, hey, you sinned against God, and he acknowledged it, and he genuinely acknowledged and confessed, and God forgave him, and he says, you forgave the guilt of my sin. So just like we grieve over dead or death of the loved one, so we are to mourn over our sin. Because mourning, this is not pretension, right? This is reality. This is genuinely, I'm sad and I am taking sin seriously. You know, we casually joke about sin. That's another problem today. We casually joke about sin in our day and culture today. You know, but remember, for God, it is not funny. How, the question we need to ask this, how seriously do I take my sin? Question number two, does it break my heart when I sin against God? Do I laugh and joke when we see evil? Do you laugh at ungodly jokes? Remember Proverbs 2:14. It says, there are some who delight in the perverseness of the wicked. We don't want to be in that, right? Delighting in the perverseness of the wicked. Many in the church today have a very defective sense of sin, and that is, we take it much lightly. I want to show you this passage here in Corinthians. That's what's going on. In 1 Corinthians 5:1-2, it says, it is reported commonly that there is fornication among you, and such fornication as is not so much as named among Gentiles, that one should have his father's wife. So there is sin going on in the church. All right? And everyone is taking it what? Lightly. And it says, you are puffed up and have not rather mourned. So what is he trying to say? Mourning here means that you are taking sin seriously. Here they were not mourning, they were taking it very lightly, very casual. That he that had done this deed might be taken away from among you. And in second letter, Paul to the Corinthians, in the second letter, chapter 12 verse 20, there is some other sins going on in the church. You notice what he says, for I am afraid lest perhaps when I come I will not find you as I desire, and that I will find, and that I will be found by you as you do not desire. He said, you know, it's like when I come there, you don't want me to be strict and lash out over there because of the sin. Lest perhaps there be contentions. So when I come, I still find you in these sins, he's saying. Contentions. So notice, contention is a sin, right? Jealousies, outburst of wrath, disputes, slanders, gossipings, pride, disorders. He's saying, oh, this is what going on in the church, besides fornication that was going on, right? And they were not mourning, they were not changing, they were taking it lightly, let it pass by, let it ignore it. They were ignoring it. Lest when I come again, my God will humble me before you, and I will mourn for many who have previously sinned and have not repented, for the impurity and fornication and lewdness which they practiced. So Jesus says here, blessed are they that mourn, that take sin seriously and keeping short accounts of their sin and continuing in fellowship, because the only way we can draw near to God is when we are having this kind of attitude, right? Draw near to God, James 4:8, and he will draw near to you. That is a condition over here, right? Notice what it says. It's not unconditional. Draw near to God, that is my initiation, and He will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Be afflicted and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to heaviness. And what is the promise we have over here? They that mourn, blessed are they that mourn, they shall be what? Comforted. Comforted. And, you know, all these promises that are given in the Beatitudes have to do with future. Okay? It's just the other way of saying entering, inheriting the kingdom, inheriting the land, inheriting the earth, shall be comforted, will receive mercy. These are different ways of saying the same thing. Alright? The point is that they shall be comforted when? In the age to come. And Jesus draws this from Isaiah chapter 61 verse 1 to 3. And we have the same thought over here. The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me because the Lord has anointed me to preach the good tidings to the poor. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to captives, and the opening of the prison to those who are bound, to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord and the day of the vengeance of our Lord. Notice now, to comfort all who mourn, to console those who mourn in Zion, to give them beauty for ashes, the oil of joy for mourning, the garment of praise for the spirit of heaviness. So this passage describes those who are overwhelmed with their sinfulness when Messiah comes. And notice Isaiah spoke of the promise that the Messiah will bring comfort. When? In the day of vengeance of our God. I'm sure that when Jesus said, blessed are they that mourn, the Jews recognize this message. This, by just that phrase, they recognized Isaiah chapter 61's context. Right? Let's look at the next beatitude. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are the meek. What does it say? For they shall inherit the earth, not heaven. Earth, right? It's so clear. They will inherit the earth. Why is it saying the earth? Because that's where the government of Jesus Christ is going to be established, right? The new heavens and new earth. Let's look at this beatitude. What does the word meek mean? And I think, you know, when Jesus said, blessed are the meek, we can refer to, go to Psalms chapter 37, because that's exactly where this term, this phrase appears. In verse 11, it says, the meek will inherit the land. See that? In verse 11 of Psalms 37, the meek will inherit the land. They will take in abundant peace. So what is the word meek mean? Well, if we read this Psalms, we get a very good idea of what a meek spirit is. Because he talks about all the other things here and then ends with verse 11 saying, the meek will inherit the land. Which means that he's just described to us what a meek spirit means. Okay, so let's look at that. Verse 1, it says, don't be angry because of those who do evil. Do not be jealous because of those who commit iniquity. So here's the first thing of a meek person. He doesn't get angry at life, at God, and at the situation he is in because of other people prospering and other people who are doing good, right? Or maybe in the eyes of the world, they are successful and they have everything that they want or they need. and you start getting discontent and you start getting angry. Okay, a meek person doesn't get angry. Because in verse 2 it says, indeed, they soon will wither like grass, and like green herbs, they will fade away. That's the reality of it. What will happen to them? Well, they can prosper all they want here and everything. But what is the end? They forget the end, the result, right? It is going to wither away like grass. As we say, grass is always greener on the other side, right? I think we should add that it's going to wither away soon too. Verse 3, trust in the Lord. Trust in the Lord. That's a meek person, right? He trusts in the Lord and do good. So I like this phrase here. What does it say here? A meek person trusts in the Lord and he always does good, no matter what. Good means he does what is right. Dwell in the land and feed on faithfulness. Here's the third thing. Delight yourself in the Lord. And he will give you the desires of your heart. See, this is where people go wrong. They start delighting on things, on other things that they want, rather than delighting in the Lord. And what is the promise here? If you do that, if you delight yourself in the Lord, guess what? There is an amazing promise over here. He will give you the desires of your heart. Amazing. This is amazing, right? Get your priorities right. That's what the psalmist is saying. You know, delight yourself in the Lord and definitely he will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord. Trust him and he will act. That's another way, another thing about a meek person. He commits his ways to the Lord. He will bring forth your righteousness as a light and your justice as a noonday sun. Be silent in the Lord's presence and wait patiently for him. So here's another characteristic of a meek person. He waits patiently for the right time. Don't be angry because of one whose way prospers or the one who implements evil schemes. Calm your anger and abandon wrath. Don't be angry. It only leads to evil. How many times you see this word coming, right? Don't be angry. Calm your anger. Don't be angry. Don't be angry. I think that is describing a meek person. It only leads to evil. Those who do evil will perish, but those who wait on the Lord will inherit the land. Yet a little while longer, and the wicked will be no more. You will search for his place, but he will not be there. And he closes with this, the meek will inherit the land. So he summed up all that he just said into this word, the meek will inherit the land. So we get a pretty good idea of what a meek spirit means. So if I want to be meek, well, that's exactly what I want to be doing. In the 12th chapter of Numbers, we are told something about the life of Moses. Now, he married a woman named Zipporah. That was his first wife. And she died, and later on, Moses married another woman who was a Cushite, and basically a black woman from Ethiopia. Okay, and Moses' sister didn't like that. Racist, I guess. She did not like that. Okay, Miriam was Moses' sister, and she was very upset that Moses married this black woman, okay? A nigger, you would say today, right?
Yeah.
No? Scratch it. She became very upset. What? And guess what? She rebelled against Moses and treated him with contempt. Notice what it says here. Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Cushite woman whom he had married. For he had married a Cushite woman. So, you know, here she's really not happy about this, and she shows her anger, and she's upset with Moses. And guess what she says here in verse 2. Has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? So now she's basically attacking his authority, right? She's saying that, has the Lord only spoken to Moses? Has he not spoken through us also? So what do you think Moses' reaction would be? Moses would say, what do you think you are? You know, God has spoken to me. He called me, and I brought up the whole nation of Israel from slavery, parted the sea, Red Sea. What do you think? Who you are? You know. But just when you would think that Moses would reply that way, we see the text saying something completely different. It says, now the man, Moses, was very meek. More than all the people who were on the face of the earth. What is the point of calling Moses meek right here in the context? Right between bitter opposition from Miriam and Moses being ridiculed over here. Why is it using here? I think the point is that meekness means committing your cause or your issues to God. Let God handle it. That's what Moses does here. He does not retaliate and does not react. He allows God to deal with it, rather than snapping at Miriam, passing remarks, or being sarcastic, or being, you know, evil speaking to his sister. What do we see? He allows God to defend him. And that's why it says, now Moses was the meekest man on the face of the earth. Just when you expect Moses to actually justify himself and defend himself, we hear this. Moses doesn't say a word. Instead, he waits patiently for the Lord. And also, he doesn't get angry at the critical words that his sister is shooting at him. What happens in the following verses is amazing. We see how the Lord rebukes Miriam and Aaron. Notice in verse 4, and suddenly the Lord said to Moses and to Aaron and Miriam, come out. Oh my. God is like pulling his sleeves. Okay. Come out now. It's like, come out, I'll see you now. Come out, you three, to the tent of the meeting. And the three of them came out. Whoa. I mean, think about that. You know, you being that in that situation. I mean, they probably are trembling, right? Aaron and Miriam are just like trembling. And we are called to the carpet. What's going to happen? And they're shaking their boots. And the Lord came down in a pillar of cloud and stood at the entrance of the tent and called Aaron and Miriam. And they both came forward. Now, this is even more stressful, right? Three of them are together, and God calls Aaron and Miriam forward. Can you imagine? It's like, you know, in the school that you have this group of kids and the teacher calls two of them. Hey, you two come here. And you are just like shaking in your boots. And these guys are situation the same. Yes. And he said, hear my words. Oh man, what a rebuke to them. Just pay attention to what the Lord is speaking. This is Lord speaking. Okay, to Aaron and Miriam. He says this, if there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, make myself known to him in a vision. I speak with him in a dream. So he said, there are many prophets that I've spoken to. I've given them vision and I've spoken them to them in dream, but not so with my servant Moses. He said he's special, basically he's saying he's special. He is faithful in all my house. With him I speak mouth to mouth, meaning face to face. If I have not given him visions and dreams, I have actually spoken to him face to face, clearly, and not in riddles, and behold the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? And guess who gets angry over here? The anger of the Lord was kindled against them, and he departed. Oh. When the cloud removed from over the tent, behold, Miriam was leprous, like snow. That was judgment of God. She became a leper. And Aaron turned toward Miriam, and behold, she was leprous. And Aaron said to Moses, oh my Lord, do not punish us because we have done foolishly and have sinned. Let her not be as one dead whose flesh is half eaten away when he comes out of his mother's womb. Ah, what do you think Moses would say here? I told you, don't mess with God's, the man of God, right? See what happened? Look at Miriam. She's become a leprous. Told you, why did you do that to me, you know? Well, Moses shows and demonstrates his meekness here. Moses does not condemn them at all for judging him earlier. He does not. See what happens when you mess with a man of God. No, he doesn't say that. But notice what he says. And what he does. Moses cried to the Lord. Oh God, please heal her, please. But the Lord said to Moses, if her father had put spit in her face, should she not be shamed 7 days? Let her be shut outside the camp 7 days, and after that she may be brought in again. So Miriam was shut outside the camp 7 days, and the people did not set out on the march till Miriam was brought again in again. So we see that the picture of a meek person, right? Now many people think that that is weakness. Okay, meekness is like weakness, that you know you're timid and you let people walk over you. You know, that's not what meekness is. All right, meekness over here is that you have power. You have the ability to do, but you still restrain yourself. That's meekness. Actually, that word is used for in Greek, they would use for animal, for like horse, who would have immense power, but its power is under control. That's the same Greek word cross is used here for meekness. We see many times that people murmured and complained, provoking God every time in the wilderness, but Moses does not pray. He always prays for them. I know once he did lose his patience, and that was he failed there. But if you notice, he is an example of a meek person here. That's why the text calls him the meekest man on the face of the earth. So let's in closing just look at a couple of portraits of meekness. Number one, a meek person is teachable. That's what we see, teachable. In James 1:19, say, know this, my beloved brothers, let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger, for the anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God. Therefore, put away all filthiness and rampant wickedness and receive with meekness the implanted word. What I like over in this passage is this truth here. Anger does not produce righteousness of God. What it's saying is that when we are angry and we do things and in reaction, we will definitely not do the right thing. Right? We will say the right wrong thing, we'll do the wrong thing. And we have all been there. But receive with meekness the implanted word. So what does that mean? I am teachable. Don't come with the attitude that I know it all. I come with a meek spirit. Hey, I want to learn. You know, I want to be teachable. You know? And you know, this is what I've seen in practical life. You know, someone who is inferior to you in the sense of maybe in education or in knowing something, you know, and we kind of look in a puffed attitude that I know it, I mean, I know it better than you. But I've always seen that, you know, even someone who's inferior or small or, you know, we always learn. If you have a teachable spirit, you will always learn something. Something, definitely. Okay. The point is that we don't learn because we do not have the teachable spirit. You know, God uses people, really. God will use people to teach you, right? Even from an unexpected source. So we should not, a meek person does not resist teaching. He's quick to listen, it says, you know, be quick to listen and slow to criticize and condemn. People are today reversed, right? They are quick to criticize and condemn and slow to listen. Meekness also affects how we interact with God and people. Look at the Proverbs 14:29. Whoever is slow to anger has great understanding, but he who has a hasty temper exalts folly. A good verse to keep in our mind. Hasty temper, mean being impulsive. A soft answer, Proverbs 15:1, turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. So the meek masters the art of using a soft answer to diffuse a situation. In Ephesians 4:1, it tells us meekness bears with other people, even when it's tough. I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you that you walk worthy of the vocation or calling wherewith you are called. How? With all lowliness and meekness. Now notice with meekness what is attached. With long-suffering and forbearing one another. The word long-suffering means that you have a long fuse. You don't snap quickly and immediately. All right? And forbearing means that you are putting up. Putting up. Again, it's completely... Remember, this is by default we are not going to be long-suffering. By default, we don't want to bear with people, people's shortcoming. But a meek person will have these things. He will be long-suffering and forbearing. Our greatest example is Jesus Christ. You know, in Matthew 11:28, Jesus said this, "Come unto me, all you that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest unto your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. What is Jesus trying to say when he says, I am lowly in heart? The point in saying that Jesus is lowly is that he is accessible. You know, the Pharisees were not accessible. They were proud. They wanted title and they want people to give praises to them and honor them. Right? They had this. They were sitting in Moses' seat, as Jesus said in Matthew 23. But Jesus is saying that I'm lowly in heart. I'm accessible. You can come to me. And he says, I am meek. What does that mean? It means that I'm not harsh. Jesus, in other words, saying, I'm not harsh like the Pharisees and Sadducees. I am not a reactionary person. I don't get easily irritated and agitated. I'm meek. You can come to me. And these are the two qualities that you would make people draw to you, isn't it? Meek and lowly. That they know that you are always accessible. They can come to you. And you're not going to shoo them away or pass any kind of, you know, degrading comments or ridicule and you know, shy them away. Jesus is, I am meek and lowly, and you will find rest unto your souls. So what he's trying to say in this passage is that I am the most understanding person in the universe. You can come to me. I will not point a finger at you, but I will open my arms. All right. So blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. So we have so far looked at humility or humbleness, mourning. We know what mourning means now, right? Is taking your sin seriously and confessing and being clear between you and God. And the third is being meek. These are the three attitudes will be welcomed in the kingdom. Thank you.